I'm Heather Anderson, and this is the FKT Podcast. Today, we're catching up with Whit Wisebram. Whit is a Triple Crown thru-hiker who also has several FKTs under his belt and a second place finish at Across the Years 10-day. Today, we're going to talk to him about the shift from long-distance backpacker to FKTer, how being a trail user influenced him to become a trail steward, and his upcoming plans to break a well-known and long-standing FKT this summer. So, let's dive in. Welcome to the show, Whit. I'm really excited to chat with you today about all kinds of wonderful trail things. So you are a Triple Crown hiker, thru hiker. You're also a ridge runner on the AT, and you're an active ultra runner. Your long runs are really, really long runs. Like, I was looking at you on Ultra Sign Up. You've done Across the Years 10-day, the Cocodona 250, the Moab 240, the Scurf 6-day, like, all of these extraordinarily, I mean, I think I scrolled back long enough, there were some actual 50Ks in there, like, so you are human, but I was really kind of blown away by just the, like, all your races are just these extraordinarily long, long races. Yeah. I know you were a thru hiker before you were an ultra runner, I think. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. So do you do these really long races? Like, do you feel like that was like an outgrowth of your thru hiking, or do you think they were independent of each other, or explain a little bit about what draws you to these big long races?
Well, first of all, like, it's an honor to be talking with you, Heather. And I've just looked up to you and respected you. You know, I know we hiked the AT the same year, 2003, which it's pretty wild that that's 20 years ago next year. Mm-hmm. So it's been awesome to follow your journey. And, you know, I ran a couple of 50Ks and just realized, like, I'm not fast enough to really be competitive in that. But it was really after the CDT in 2017. I had hiked the Arizona Trail that year and then straight into the CDT. And that October, when I finished the CDT, I don't know, I feel like I had finally dialed in some things with thru hiking that allowed me to walk away from the experience feeling strong and healthy as opposed to withered and, you know, beaten down. So it almost, you know, I got back to Atlanta and I knew I needed to spend some time every day outside. And I started going to the local state park, Sweetwater Creek. And, you know, I'd go on these short hikes, but it just wasn't really scratching that itch. You know, I didn't really feel like I was in that flow state that I had gotten used to from thru hiking. So one day it was just kind of like, I'm going to try to run this, even though I hate running, you know, like, and just sort of fell in love with that rhythm and that mindset. And so just skipped over the half marathons and marathons and signed up for a 50K and kind of knowing that I could probably walk it in the time limit if I needed to, and just kind of progressed from there. But yeah, I felt like it was almost like honoring the experience of hiking the CDT, which, you know, for me was the last trail of the Triple Crown. I came away from that feeling, sort of like it was like a blessing, you know, and I wanted to honor that blessing by continuing, to move forward and push my limits and, you know, endurance sports and stuff like that. So that was really how I got into the ultra running, but it's really just been sort of a strange interplay between the two. I don't really love racing. I kind of find that it's this really awesome infrastructure for you to be able to push harder and longer because you have aid stations. You don't have to carry quite as much. You have medics and people that can watch out for you, so you can really kind of let go and see where you're at. And there's also been things that I've learned from ultra running that I can apply to thru hiking and the other way around too. So it's just sort of like a play on each other, you know.
Yeah, I think personally for me that's very similar to my journey as well, so that makes a lot of sense. I feel like I've heard that from a lot of like long distance hikers too that have transitioned to ultra running. It's just like a continuation of the journey. So yeah. I'm curious, what got you into long distance backpacking in the first place? Like, how did you end up on that trajectory?
So I grew up in Atlanta, which, you know, is pretty close to Springer Mountain, the southern terminus of the AT. Through, you know, from the time I was probably 10 years old, my parents would send me away to summer camp in Western North Carolina for like 5 weeks every summer. And
wow.
They just, I'm sure it was
There
a
might have
great
been some
time for them.
underlying reason for that.
I'm sure there was. But at this summer camp, you could like, you know, you could do the arts and crafts and the archery and all that stuff, but you could also sign up for these like 3-day backpacking trips, 4-day backpacking trips. As you got older, you could like the ultimate trip was like the 5-day AT hike where you would do like 50 miles in 5 days. It was in the Mount Rogers, Grayson Highlands area. And so that was my first experience on the AT. And, you know, it was just like love at first sight. I kind of knew as soon as I graduated high school that I was gonna do that. So when I was 19, my dad drove me up to Springer and I just started walking north and it just clicked with me immediately. I loved it.
That's awesome. Were you solo when you did that hike on when you're 19?
I started with a friend and he quit at Fontana Dam.
Oh,
But we had met this other guy who kind of like became part of our crew, and that guy Ben is like still my best friend to this day. You know,
wow.
we ended up hiking the whole rest of the trail together and still best buddies.
That's a pretty incredible journey when you're 19.
Yeah, you know, like looking back on it, you know, it's like my other thru hikes, because it was 12 years before I went back to thru hiking, and you just have a lot more to think about, you know, when you're a little older. Like there's a lot more to ponder and kind of like take in and appreciate. I was probably kind of just like a little shit when I was 19, you know. I didn't make a ton of friends on the trail. I hope I didn't like annoy anyone, but like looking back,
think it's impossible not to do that when you're that age. Like, I think that's just part of growing. That's just part of growing up. Now, more recently, you have been a ridge runner on the AT. And I don't know if our audience will necessarily know what that is. Can you tell us a little bit about what that is and why you chose to do that?
Yeah, a ridge runner on the AT sort of functions like a park ranger, but we don't do any law enforcement. We don't have much like authority, which I like, you know. We work for the Appalachian Trail Conservancy and for the local trail club in our area. So I've been working for the Potomac Appalachian Trail Club. Basically, I have 60 miles of the Appalachian Trail that I take care of from the northern boundary of Shenandoah National Park up to Harpers Ferry, West Virginia. And my job is amazing. It's literally hiking that 60 miles, cleaning up trash, cleaning up the shelters, but also just checking in with hikers, encouraging people. I'm a wilderness EMT, so I can respond to emergencies if needed. But it's been a really interesting experience to hike the same 60 miles over and over and over for the last 3 summers. It's kind of given me a new appreciation for getting to know like a certain area, as opposed to sort of that like bittersweet aspect of thru hiking where you kind of have to keep moving. You might see something that sparks your interest, but you don't really have time to explore it. I think that's also been something that's really helped me with these like multi-day loop races where, you know, you might run around like a 1 mile loop for 10 days straight. It's just, you know, finding ways to appreciate that loop each time differently is kind of the way I look at every time I patrol my section on the AT. You know, there's always something different, always something new to appreciate, something to inspire you. It's been an awesome 3 years.
This has happened to me like on my home trails, but where you've literally gone past something hundreds of times and never seen it. And then you see it and you're like, has that been there this entire time? Has that happened to you in that section? Okay.
Of course, yeah. And a lot of it's, you know, just like little changes each time, whether it's different weather or the ridge running season up there is sort of like you get the end of spring, the summer, obviously, and then like the beginning of fall. The trail shows itself to you in different ways, based on, you know, like literally how many leaves are on the trees. Like you might have a different view or see something different. But yeah, I've gotten to know it pretty well, you know,
I can
like
imagine. You know every rock on the roller coaster.
Yeah, I love the roller coaster. There's like a family of copperheads that lives at you know, one of the shelters that it's
Manassas
like
Gap, right?
Manassas Gap Shelter,
Yep.
yeah. And it's like I can locate them within 1 minute of being at the shelter almost every time, you
Yeah.
know.
I do my best not to locate them every time I go there. I just get water and leave.
It does have the best water in my section though. That
Oh,
pipe
yeah.
spring is just always pumping, so
That's an incredible spring. Yeah, I don't, I mean, it's, maybe it's the same lineage, but those copperheads were there in 2003, because that was my first like knowledge of copperheads as I was walking into that shelter. I didn't see them, but I was told that they were there, and I was like, well, I'm not staying here tonight then. I'm leaving.
I
So
sort of love the self-regulating snake ecosystems at the
yes.
shelters. Like you'll have like a big black snake that lives up in the rafters that kind of stops the copperheads from coming into the shelter, you
That's
know?
much
And
appreciated. And the copperheads stop the mice. So it's like, yeah, this is a cycle of life there. So, yeah. I'm kind of curious, having been a thru hiker and a runner, and you've had a lot of these experiences, like setting FKTs and things like that, and then going out and being more of like a trail steward, how has that affected, like, maybe your perspective? Have you had any shifts or some interesting, like, maybe internal conversations about the juxtaposition of that?
I think, you know, for me, it was a pretty natural evolution after completing the Triple Crown in 2017 to becoming a ridge runner because, first of all, on like a personal level, it was just a new way to experience a trail that I had already through hiked. And that's also the reason I love FKTs. I've actually never set an FKT on a trail that I haven't just hiked normally before. And I really like that perspective of just it's like a new way to experience the same trail. It just seemed natural to, you know, have this desire to want to give back to the trails that had like given me so much. And so becoming a ridge runner seemed like a really tangible way to do that. And then once you become a ridge runner and you start realizing how much goes into keeping these trails open and clear and clean, and that there's so much infrastructure and behind the scenes work that goes into these things, it sort of just gave me a new appreciation for trail work, for trail clubs, for the volunteers. You know, I think like probably 99% of the stuff that gets done out there is volunteer based work. So it was a really, really cool new perspective on the trail.
Yeah, I think that is something, like you were saying, through hikers, because they're always passing through, they're continually passing through, they don't necessarily notice. We notice when the trail hasn't been maintained, but we don't necessarily think about who did the maintenance and, like, you know, that sort of aspect of it until you are maybe spending more time in one spot or, you know, connecting with the trail in like this other way. So I think that's a really valuable connection to have.
It's a really good feeling. You know, I became a certified Sawyer a couple of years ago, so I can
Nice.
actually like carry the chainsaw out on the trail and clear blowdowns. And it's a really cool feeling when like a thru hiker comes through right after you've just like cleared the trail and they say thank you and show appreciation. It kind of like makes you feel like it's, you know, we're a really worthwhile pursuit. It's not like a high paying job and it's seasonal and all that kind of stuff. But at the end of the day, like I do think that the hikers appreciate us and we kind of get to be that like advocate for the trail and also just like an ambassador for the behind the scenes like crews and volunteers because the ridge runners are really the ones that are interfacing with most of the thru hikers. It's felt important. It's felt cool. I hope to keep doing it. Although this summer I won't be there.
Yeah, you have some other plans. That's a nice segue. Tell us about your summer plans, why you won't be ridge running this summer.
I'm going to be attempting to set a new self-supported Pacific Crest Trail FKT, which you hold right now. You know, I read Thirst a few years ago and it came out and it was super inspiring. I think after my Arizona Trail FKT in 2018, I remember the last couple of days coming into Patagonia and heading out towards the border over the Miller Peaks and thinking, what's next? And it seemed like the logical next step, but it took a few years to actually set aside the time and kind of like look at the weather patterns and, you know, maybe have a chance of getting through the Sierra without too much snow and hopefully beating some fires and you know, making it happen. So
So when you went out onto the Arizona Trail in 2018, that was where you kind of got the inspiration to maybe go and try a PCT FKT, was while you were doing that.
yeah, so basically, you know, I had run like a 50-mile race in Alabama was the longest I had run until 2018. And I was up in Maine hanging out with my family. They have a little spot in coastal Maine. And I knew I wanted to try the 100 mile distance, and just, there weren't really any like races, and I was kind of having this internal conflict where it's like, I love doing this stuff self-supported. I love having a pack on. I love the rhythm of just like being on my own in the woods. And so I just decided to go try and set the FKT on the 100 mile wilderness section of the AT. Certainly the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. I mean, I was in
Right.
tears, just crying. I hadn't been there since 2003, and if I had known that there were like ways to get out, I probably would have quit, but I like knew my van was at one end of the thing, and I was like, I have to get there. There's no other option. So,
Right.
and I think it was just about a month after that that I went out to the Arizona Trail. It's a pretty different experience to do something that's like multiple weeks long,
Right.
self-supported. I was pretty confident in my thru hiking skills and sort of like the logistical skills that could make it happen. And it was just like an intuition that that was the next thing I was supposed to do. It was sort of like a strange thought I had even in 2017, just thru hiking the Arizona Trail. It was like, I wonder if I could set the speed record on this thing. And then you like show up at the terminus and you're like, oh shit, this is real. Like, how did I get here?
It's
But
that's an interesting progression. 100 miles, 800 miles, 2,600 miles.
I really appreciated when we came to see you speak in Athens a couple months ago on your book tour. Like, it's terrifying to think about going for the PCT record, honestly. I'm not, in some ways it's almost more terrifying the more of these things that you do, because the realities of what it's going to take out of you and the struggles are have been shown to you, in a really in a real way. It's like, I know what this is going to be like in some way, and it's objectively scary. But I remember you kind of like set my mind at ease at that talk when you said, like, it was sort of a really good reminder, like the hardest part is just showing up to the start, and once you start moving, like that's the thing that we're good at. That's what we know how to do. I'm actually pretty bad at normal life, but once I throw my pack on and start walking, like that's where I found that I'm the most comfortable and like at the most ease in my own skin and with myself and with my thoughts over the last few years. I know that with all of the anxiety and anticipation, as soon as I start walking, I think that it'll start making sense.
I've always been terrified starting out, so I think that's pretty normal. So I'm kind of curious what your process has been like. We talked about it a little bit when we were in Athens, but I'm kind of curious what your planning process has been like for this. I mean, have you been back to the PCT since you thru hiked it in 2015?
I've been out to visit some friends in like the Sierra foothills in Northern California, and I've revisited some sections up by like Ebbets Pass and Sonora Pass, and I've been back through Yosemite and some other things, but no substantial time on the PCT really since 2015. I think the desert experiences that I've had on the Arizona Trail and like New Mexico on the CDT are going to be super helpful this time around. The desert kicked my ass like in 2015. It brought me to my knees. Like, I didn't know what I was doing. It was the first time I'd ever tried moving through the desert, and before flying out to San Diego, I had this image in my mind of like the Saharan desert. I thought we were going to be like climbing over sand dunes and stuff like that. I think having a little more and the desert has become my favorite terrain to hike in. So I think that'll be super helpful. Yeah, planning. I haven't done a ton yet. I'm starting to dial in the resupplies. Like I'm really thankful to have the example that Scott set and that you set of like no vehicles at all. I really found on the Arizona Trail that following those rules helped me connect to the trail in a way that I had never experienced, where it's like I spent more time. You always get the people that are like, oh, you're missing the point if you're going that fast and stuff like that. But I never felt more connected to a trail than when I did the Arizona Trail in 2018. It was like I saw every sunrise, every sunset. I never left the trail more than half a mile, I think, that whole time, you know, and just got to be like really intimate with it. And so I'm excited to experience the PCT in that way. And like I said, I'm thankful for the example that you guys have set before me. So I hope that I can honor that in my walk.
I'm sure you will. Yeah, I think that it's an interesting level of additional complexity to add to a hike to make it vehicle-less. I guess when I did the Arizona Trail, I did that too. So I kind of established that for the Arizona Trail because I liked it from my AT and my PCT records. And so, yeah, it is. It does make you feel there's something about like not getting into a vehicle, not leaving your feet for the entire time. That does make you feel a lot more grounded and connected to.
And it does add that complexity, like you said, but it also makes things a lot more simple because you don't really have a choice anyway. So
right, yeah, yeah. There's no choice in it. Yeah, it's like you know, a whole bunch of resupply points are just off the table. Like, well, I just don't even have the option to go there. So you just don't even have to think about that anymore. So it does simplify things in some ways. So what are your big concerns going into it? I mean, you mentioned the snow and the wildfires. Like, I haven't been following the PCT conditions at all this year, so I'm kind of curious, like, what it is you see.
I mean, unfortunately for the PCT and for the Sierra, like, the snow it's an early melt, so it's looking pretty low right now, but I guess that's advantageous for an FKT. I'm concerned about water in the desert. You know, anyone that's ever traversed the desert knows that it frames water is such a valuable, important, sacred resource, and it helps build a different relationship to water than I had ever had before that. So I'm concerned that there won't be any water left by mid-June. But I also know that you and Joe and Tim and everyone that's come before me has figured it out. So I'm excited to figure it out as I go. And I'm concerned about a couple of the fire closures that are still lingering from past fires. I know Tim Olson had to make some really tough choices up in Oregon around Mount Jefferson. And so I've been really trying to research what I'm going to do up there because you have to go really far east or really far west to get around that closure. And it looks like it could possibly add over 100 miles of hiking. So I'm kind of keeping my fingers crossed that maybe it'll open.
Yeah, that's pretty significant. Has the forest put any updates? Like, did they project that it's going to stay closed?
No, not yet. So
interesting. Wow.
But yeah, where I ridge run is like almost the halfway point of the AT. I think a lot of people have heard the cliche that Harper's Ferry is like the psychological halfway point, even though it's not the technical halfway point. It's funny when I start seeing the through hikers, and you know, some of them are ecstatic. You know, I'm halfway through, and then some of them are kind of like, oh, I'm only halfway through, you know, and it's just like daunting burden. But what I try to always tell them is like, you know, doing these trails in some ways is more about adaptability than it is about planning or knowing everything up front. And I think one of the lessons that I've learned in completing the Triple Crown and some of these other FKTs is how to adapt on the go. I know there's going to be a lot of challenges and a lot of things that I'm going to have to figure out, but that's one of the things I love about it. So,
yeah. Yeah, definitely. I think that resiliency and adaptability is something that serves you well, both on and off the trail too. And it's definitely one of those great lessons that trails can give us for life. Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm wishing you lots of luck. I'm looking forward to following along. When is you plan to start?
Hopefully June 15th at the latest. I'll probably go out to LA and stay with some friends, you know, June 1st, and just kind of hope to get going. You know, the permitting is a little tricky with the FKT because they don't the PCTA doesn't issue northbound long distance permits after June 1st for the entirety of the trail. So
interesting.
I was able to get a permit from Kennedy Meadows South to Canada starting July 1st. So I can't really outrun that. So I'll kind of just kind of have to play it a little bit by ear. I kind of found with training for across the years this year, which was a 10-day loop race in Arizona, I was able to, you know, run over 1,000 kilometers in 10 days. I didn't really do that much physical training before the race. I spent as much time with my family and friends as I could, and I tried to go into it just feeling sort of like my cup was full with like support and love, and knowing that the people I care about were behind me and supported me. It's not that I'm not trying to get my legs strong, but yeah, for a project this big, I don't think that you can like physically train yourself into success for something like that. So I'm spending time with family and friends. I'm about to go down to the Arizona border for a month and do volunteer work, which I've been doing for a few years with a humanitarian aid organization down there. That helps, you know, put into perspective what real endurance is. A family walking from Central America with nothing to the U.S. Kind of frames FKTs as sort of like a parlor trick or a magic trick, if you will. It's sort of de-emphasizes and makes it a little less important in my mind, which I think is a good way to go into it, you know.
Yeah, keeping perspective mentally is definitely really important, especially for something very long. You did an incredible amount of miles across the years. You were second overall. Was that intentionally like a training for? Were you already planning the PCT? Was that kind of your thought, was seeing how that went, you know, see what you could do in 10 days?
You know, the weird thing about all these races, like the Kokodota 250 and the Moab 240 and all the prior FKTs, is that like, and I don't know if you've had this experience, but you like finish it and maybe like before you started, you thought that this was like the penultimate goal of it all. And then you finish and you kind of, for me, I just feel like, oh, that was more training for some abstract thing that's going to come up in my life later. Sometimes like my intuition, you know, where it's like, okay, you did this, so like maybe you should try the PCT, and it terrifies me that that's like where my mind goes because because I've showed myself now that like I will actually do that. And you know, but yeah, it all feels like training. Like every long race I've done, every FKT I've done, adds to sort of like the experience and the skill set. And I have a strange feeling after the PCT that I actually kind of like know what my next 3 years are going to look like. And it's this is just like the beginning of a trilogy that I hope that everything has been leading to. So I'm
that sounds super intriguing.
Well, so running 1,000 kilometers at across the years qualified me for the longest race on earth, which is the Sri Chimnoy 3,100-mile self-transcendence race in New York City.
Okay.
And so it looks like I might be able to be invited to that next year. So it looks like the PCT this year, maybe that race next year, and then I'll be going after my mentor's AT self-supported record when I turn 40. So that's kind of how it's playing out for me right now.
Yeah, wow, that's an incredibly ambitious 3 years. I think that sounds pretty amazing, though.
So, yeah, well, yeah. We'll have to do the PCT first and see how it goes. But
first steps.
But
cool.
But yeah, I can't wait to get out there. Like I'm nervous, but I'm also really excited because you start walking these trails and, you know, these things, like when I hiked the AT in 03, like even though I didn't have a ton of life experience at 19, there was something that told me that this was life changing and that it would always be with me. And 12 years later, I wasn't super happy with where my life was. And there was just that little reminder and spark in my mind that was like, 5 months seems like a huge sacrifice, but to really regain some mental clarity and mental health perspectives and also some physical health, like it's really maybe not that big of a sacrifice. And I'm just really thankful for what these trails have given me over the years, especially the AT. It just always seems to, I always seem to find myself on that trail when I need it. You know, it's like a companion that's been there for me. So getting out on the PCT in 2015, I really, really needed that trail, and it really changed my life again to get out there and to get into that headspace, which for me is more meditative, and it's sort of this like strange dance and dialogue with the natural world around me and rhythm. That for me is what it's all about. It's just sort of strange that over the years, that rhythm, the physical rhythm is a little faster than it used to be. That sort of opens up that dialogue and opens up that perspective. It'll be a blessing to be out there.
Thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing about all of this with us. I really appreciate it and appreciate your insight.
Yeah. Thank you, Heather.
You're welcome. And like I said earlier, best of luck out there this summer. I look forward to following along.
Thank you.
Thanks, Whit, for coming on the show. You can check out all of Whit's FKTs on the website, www.fastestknowntime.com. You can also follow him on Instagram at yung.chattahoochee. Thanks for tuning in. Until next time, this is Heather on the FKT podcast.